President's Weekend reminds us all that February is quite a rich month for honoring patriots of all stripes. There's Lincoln and Washington, of course, whom we duly venerate. But let's not go through these 29 days without paying some homage to Hattie Carraway, the first woman elected to our United States Senate, serving from 1931 to 1945, born on February 1st. And Rosa Louise McCauley Parks, born February 4th, the first lady of civil rights. And Ronald Reagan, our 40th president, born on February 6th, 1911. And Susan B. Anthony, tireless pioneer for women's suffrage, born on February 15th, who, by the way, was arrested in 1872 for voting illegally in the presidential election. Thank goodness she wouldn't be blocked today, or would she? And two prominent patriots who dared to criticize their homeland, Malcolm X, black Muslim leader, was killed on February 21st. An African-American educator and activist, W.E.B. Du Bois, born on February 23rd, 1868. So my friends, to get a bigger and bolder portrait of America, we need to pay considerable tribute during February to a diversity of America's patriots, not merely Abraham and George. Clearly, the overall health of America is on all of our minds and hearts right now. Today's sermon won't be another tirade against our nation. I'm not good at tirades. And anyway, we're hurting. But with the lingering battles in the Middle East, a constipated Congress, unresolved border tragedies, recent natural disasters and gun killings, persistent racial strife, not to mention health care, educational and economic inequities bedeviling America. We're both a troubled and a troubling land. And so I want to focus upon the cornerstones of democracy. What makes America a good nation, a pretty darn good nation, when we perform at our best? Three qualities come to the top of my list. You'd have your own inventory. Religious freedom, patriotic diversity, and compassionate service. Freedom, diversity, and compassion bespeak the soul of Unitarian Universalism as well. You know, way back in the 50s, 1950s, we were considered by some American sociologists as America's real religion. That was the phrase. America's real religion. Let's measure up to it. What those guys, the Unitarian Universalists, seem to be doing. Now, whether or not that's precisely true then or now, our core values remain similar to those of this country at its founding, and when we stay on purpose. First, religious freedom. Remember, the Pilgrims were an English sect fleeing persecution. Fleeing persecution in their homeland. They were called separatists because they desired to be completely separate from the official Church of England. And these independent souls wanted to choose their ministers democratically. Wow, what an idea. They insisted on local parish autonomy. What an idea. Just as our Unitarian Universalist congregations do today. Unquestionably, our American dream of religious freedom, which started in the Plymouth colony, has been tarnished over the years. In fact, in early America, an atmosphere of religious imperialism prevailed. The colonists saw nothing wrong with denying the rights of their Native American contemporaries and systematically deprived African American slaves of their inferior beliefs. A student of history We'll also recall that among the trees in the lawn of the Massachusetts State Capitol, just off the Boston Common, right next door, right across from where our Unitarian Universalist headquarters used to be, our statues honoring two women, First Ann Hutchinson, expelled from the Massachusetts Bay Colony in 1638 for what? For the religious crimes of heresy, conducting unauthorized discussions in her own home. And second, Mary Dyer, hanged on Boston Common in 1660 for what? The crime of simply being a Quaker. And Baptists in Virginia were subjected to horse whippings and other painful indignities. Gradually, between 1620 and 1776, America was steered toward the radically new idea of religious freedom. Fresh ways of thinking began to emerge with the Age of Reason, and Baptists and Quakers and Unitarians and Universalists and others practiced religious toleration and encouraged its spread. So that by 1787, when the Constitution was written, and remember, some of America's founders were either Unitarians or Universalists, religious freedom was made the law of the land. This is the way it's going to be here. And it was determined that a person's religious beliefs were his or her private concern and inviolate right. Private concern and inviolate right. You may remember that our American founders were related to various denominations, and they disagreed as to the nature of religion, debating whether it was rooted mainly in reason or in revelation or a combination of the two, but they were unswervingly committed. The notion of disallowing one dominant religion. Simply put, they erected a wall of separation between church and state. We dare not take for granted this noble experiment at the heart of our American dream, a courageous experiment which interlinks social and political and religious freedoms. For in other countries, there's often no such pattern of religious diversity. One religious group may have special constitutional standing, as in England and in Scandinavia. Another faith may dominate without having special legal rights, as in France and Mexico. And several groups may receive favored treatment. Look at Holland. Look at Germany. When I worked in the Evangelische Kirche in West Berlin in the 1960s, 10% of everyone's income tax was automatically taken, seized, to support either the Protestant or Catholic churches of the land. Or all religious belief and worship may be discouraged, as has been the case in Russia, in China, and certainly in the Czech Republic till the overthrow of communism in 1989. In fact, our own Unitarian congregation in Prague, which Carolyn and I have personally visited, suffered directly at the hands of the communist government, as well as being sabotaged regularly by inside traitors in the room. And in Romania, our Transylvanian Unitarian sisters and brothers have been doubly persecuted as both an ethnic and a religious minority, even until this day. It's better, but it isn't over. And our religious kin in the Philippines suffer bigotry as well. Furthermore, sometimes the in-resident religion is not only fundamentalist, but also politicized, as tragically evidenced today throughout the Middle East. Yet we could hardly say that religious freedom has been fully achieved in America. Certain religious groups have been treated badly in our homeland. The histories of anti-Catholicism and anti-Semitism sorely illustrate that. And we Unitarian Universalists have been the target of our own share of discrimination and exclusion, despite our modest size and the fact that we're always mixed up with the Moonies or Unification or somebody else. And there remain those, of course, who still clamor for America not only to be a theocracy, but a Christian one at that. A certain, and I can give the real name, because he's in prison, John Brockhoff, is serving in prison for bombing an abortion clinic. And he put it baldly. The things left-wing liberal types say about me are absolutely true. I'm a very narrow-minded, intolerant, reactionary, Bible-thumping fundamentalist, a zealot and a fanatic, and I'm proud of it. But the reason the United States is a great nation, he goes on to say, is because she's blessed by God alone and because she was founded upon truth, justice, and narrow-mindedness. I don't know you personally, but you're wrong. We were founded upon truth and justice and open-mindedness. We need to bring up our children in this country in the belief that one may worship or not worship as she or he chooses. And whatever the choice, one can still be a first-rate American. I contend that we liberal religionists are as pro-life, as pro-family, and pro-morality as any fundamentalist, and we must enter the political fray and promote vigorously yet respectfully our views of human freedom and dignity. For Unitarian Universalists, we are convinced that good religion and good government mean promoting a sense of pluralism, not favoritism. A sense of persuasion, not coercion. A sense of mediating moral language, not alienating jargon. A sense of humility, not arrogance, about ultimate beliefs and values. Building bridges, not walls. Furthermore, some of us believe that to achieve and sustain these ideals for a nation, we must subordinate ourselves occasionally for the good of the whole. In other words, sacrifice. Sacrifice some. Sacrifice through taxes to properly educate our young. Sacrifice through community service as volunteers. Simply sacrifice social and economic entitlements when we don't need them. Sacrifice some of our personal freedoms in service of a healthy environment and a just society. As it's been said, we need the Statue of Liberty on the East Coast to be supplemented by the Statue of Responsibility on the West Coast. What if before entering the voting booth during any election time, someone was there to say, "Okay, my fellow citizen, my Democratic comrade, please raise your right hand, your left hand, both of them, doesn't matter. Do you solemnly swear to vote for the common good of America over your own private interests? So help you God or whatever power generates the juice in your journey." That's not just a radical or novel idea. The common good is a core principle upon which our country was founded. A second mark of our American dream is our unswerving commitment to patriotic diversity, which flows directly from our commitment to religious and civic freedoms. Today's political orthodoxy to the contrary. There's no single right way to be a patriot, a lover of or a loyalist to one's homeland. There are many ways. Your way and my way and the way of others. And all our religion ever demands is that we wear our patriotism honorably and we express it respectfully. Diversity reigns supreme in our theology and ethics. Why shouldn't it in our politics and in our behaviors. Patriotic integrity summons every American to action, be it serving our country abroad or home. True patriots are always on duty, lounging only occasionally on couches, spending only so much time with your favorite political public show. And yes, patriots carry on a lover's quarrel with their homeland. It was some 50 years ago, Dr. Martin Luther King actually spoke at our Unitarian Universalist General Assembly the year before he was assassinated. And he said, "I'm proud to be a creatively maladjusted American. Because until the good society is realized, I will remain creatively maladjusted." Plus, patriots are known to wave flags, but not necessarily only one or even two. Sometimes three flags, such as we used to have standing tall in our meeting house at First Church. Flags representing our homeland, the United Nations, and the globe we cradle in common. Why three? Because full-bore patriots are citizens of the universe, enlist to serve and protect the well-being of country and more, the international network and more, the entire ecosystem. Bottom line, patriots heed their well-honed and ever-evolving consciences. As I like to phrase it, my conscience, informed, compassionate, and always fallible, remains in creative tension with the directives of my government. And so, in my braver moments, I will affirm America when she seems worthy of praise. And I will criticize her when she falls short of our founding mission. And I will comfort her when she's in need of consolation. And haven't we all been engaged in all three, ongoingly? Whenever you and I fail to exercise our freedom responsibly, whenever we fail to express our right to dissent, whenever we let religious bigotry or social injustice or national chauvinism triumph, we in effect starve the flame of freedom's holy light. We turn our backs on being full-fledged patriots. But the road remains long and hard, given today's voter suppression efforts in our own land, and given the Electoral College debacle. And wouldn't it be wondrous if Congress deigned to make Election Day a national holiday, as is being considered, wherein there's automatic voter registration, universal mail-in ballots, everyone gets a chance to vote who wishes to vote? What's to argue with that? And we got to do everything we can to address the apathy of our citizenry. We sport one of the lowest voter turnouts of any country in the world. Now, there's a resurgence of civic engagement among our 20-somethings. I've checked it out with our grandkids in their 20s. But with movements such as Black Lives Matter and immigration rights, there's a lot at stake for the younger generation, and they're feeling it. But still, indifference reigns supreme. There was a recent college graduate, 22 years old, who said, "I don't care enough to care about why I don't care." The best cure for the ills of democracy is always more democracy. The third cornerstone of what makes America truly America, a pretty darn good country, is our commitment not to prowess, but to goodness. Not to conquest, but to restoration, repair, healing, reconciliation. As with religious freedom and patriotic diversity, compassionate service hasn't always been our accomplishment, but it remains our aspiration as a core tenet of our American dream. Our humanitarian record, both at home and abroad, as with that of many countries, has been checkered in recent history. But it's not my job as American to blame or shame or critique other lands. It's to take care of my own, which will take all my time on this earth. It's our duty to work collaboratively with others to restabilize politically and economically any regions of the world that we've chosen to assault, starting in our own homeland. I mean, aren't justice and mercy American ideals? Isn't humanitarianism central to our way of being Americans? Or is compassion merely a platitude? Is it a political ploy? Is it a policy reserved for our own kind? I hope not. I simply want a good government and a good president who will motivate the rest of our citizenry to be good enough individuals. Ironically, I was just thinking about that this morning when Yahweh brought creation into existence. Yahweh said, may it be good enough. There's no mention in Hebrew about perfection. As a rabbi friend of mine says, I often tell my husband, she's a rabbi, I want to be a B-plus partner. I want to be a B-plus parent. I want to be a B-plus citizen. All this BS about being perfect or A-minus isn't what I'm going for. I know myself too well. Maybe you do too. So we'd be far better off if we quit focusing upon all the hype about America being great. Come on, just work on being a pretty darn good country. Always needing to get better. And good not as in power or splendor or wealth, but good as in practicing justice and freedom at home. And when we sufficiently clean up our own side of the street, then being good in our willingness to model some of our best values abroad. And good starts with telling the truth. It's a tragic state of affairs when the American people assume that withholding on the part of our president and administration and elected representatives because we expect them to lie or compromise or cater to their own interests. And to counter such cynicism, we need the political leaders of our land to heed the wisdom of author Brenda Uhland. I have my own two commandments to promote to the world. No cruelty and no lying. No cruelty and no lying. And that pretty much take care of most everything. But there's more to being good. For example, to counteract terror, and this idea isn't original with me, perhaps the United States could take the lead in getting all the advanced industrial societies to participate in a modern-day global Marshall Plan that would dedicate hundreds of billions of dollars each year for the next, not several months, in a task force, the next 30 years or so, to the cause of addressing hunger and homelessness and inadequate education and insufficient health care, the root causes of terrorism, both within this land and in the world at large. Let the United States be brave enough, bold enough to set up an international body of recognized and utterly diverse spiritual leaders and academics and nurses and educators and community organizers and people from various ethnic and racial and economic classes to supervise the expenditures and guarantee that they aren't siphoned off by selfish national leaders, but are used to promote creative and compassionate programs. To counter terror, both abroad and at home, we've got to eradicate the conditions. We've got to at least address the conditions it created. Eradicate's too strong. It won't happen during our lifetimes. Stay on the path forward. And with all the talk about the possible reinstatement of the military draft, I say, let the United States require every citizen, every young woman and man, to give at least 2 years. I think probably 3 or 4 is better. See, we don't grow up to we're 25. I'd say two to 4 years. Let's make it 4 years of national duty to be spent in delivering services, providing training, education, or otherwise assisting in the implementation of this global plan of compassion. I sure could have benefited from it. I got a deferment for being in ministerial training. I could have given more. Somebody called me on it. Somebody stretched me. And I think of no greater challenge or blessing for our 8 grandchildren and the kids that I spend time with all the time. You know, we talk about children and youth at risk. I got news for us. There isn't a child or youth that isn't at risk of not being their full selves. That's something of what I mean by being a good nation. So let's stop worrying about leading the world and start by joining it. And then with greater humility, we can possibly play a wiser, more compassionate role. And someday soon, it appears to this patriot that if we're true to our American way of life, to our path of freedom and diversity and compassion, we must say no more innocent deaths at home and abroad. Someday soon, America's conscience will be goaded to wage peace. Someday soon, our espoused character will push us to lay down roads, to dig wells of clean water where people can safely drink, build hospitals and schools, teach hygiene and sexual ethics and mathematics, and inoculate against disease and battle malnutrition and treat people of different colors and orientations in classes fairly at home and abroad. Someday soon, we will join with others who are committed to transforming the injustices in which we are soaked. Someday soon. Someday soon. And if that sounds too upbeat, so be it. For I belong to a life affirming this worldly. I'm not waiting around for anything else. I'm going full bore and for broke during the time I have remaining. And if it sounds too idealistic, so be it. For we're card-carrying citizens, are we not, of a country whose pilgrim forebear William Bradford had inscribed on his gravestone a Latin passage which translated reads, "What our forebears with such devotion did accomplish, let us not lightly surrender." Let us not lightly surrender. Let's go forth and be a pretty darn good country. Starting this afternoon.